The message this morning, the outline is not original. I borrowed the outline from a preacher. It's called Six Things a Father Ought to Be. Six Things a Father Ought to Be. The most of the message is original and scriptures and that sort of things. But you give credit to whom credit is due. And a little paper that I get had the outline F-A-T-H-E-R-S, fathers. I chose to go with F-A-T-H-E-R, and that's an acrostic for each one. We are going to be sharing what a father ought to be. I'd like to start out by, thanking the Lord that I had a father who had a large impact on my life. I was blessed as well to have a stay-at-home mom. My mom was home all of my child-rearing years. And I just want to tell you, dads, your family needs you. I was looking at some statistics, and the statistics are really quite alarming. More than 24 million children in America, that's one out of three, live in a home that is absent of the biological father. Man. It also said in the statistics that girls who live in a father-absent home are seven times more likely to experience teen pregnancy. Compared with living with both parents, living in a single-parent home doubles the risk that a child will suffer physical, educational, or emotional neglect. I know some of you don't have a choice, and you're struggling with that, and you're trying to do the very best that you can do, but I just want to make a challenge to fathers. Stick with the stuff. Try make your marriage work. Get counseling if you need to get counseling, if there's a problem there. Realize if you have children, there's more at stake than just you and your happiness. And so as I look through the scripture, this certainly is not at all an inclusive list. But there are six things that a father ought to be. And the first thing is a financial provider. 1 Timothy chapter 5 and verse 8, it kind of even moves to the extended family there as you read the context, but it says in 1 Timothy chapter 5 and verse 8, if any provide not for his own, and especially for those of his own house, he hath denied the faith and is worse than an infidel. My dad worked hard all of his life. He worked as a postman in the daytime, and I remember from the time I was about 12 years old, when he'd come back from the post office, I'd go with my dad. Oh, yeah, it was horrible. I was abused, so I had to learn to work. I mean, you know, I was mowing lawns at 12 years of age, didn't even have a permit. Oh, man, I'm so warped, I can't even tell you. But anyway, learned to work and did a lot of things with my dad, learned a lot of things there. But my dad was the financial provider. Now, I understand very clearly the Proverbs 31 woman oftentimes brings in some financial assistance, but a dad is to be the financial provider. Now, I want to clarify this just a little bit because I don't want you for a moment to think that the happiest homes are the wealthiest homes. I didn't know we didn't have a lot of money. I didn't realize that growing up. Sometimes things were pretty thin in relationship to that, but I never knew it. I found that oftentimes wealthy families, and I worked for a lot of wealthy families, that their families were a mess. That their families were a mess. So it isn't. I'm not primarily talking about that you have to. Your kids have to have everything. In fact, I think sometimes when your kids have everything and they want for nothing, and they don't have to work for anything, that you're setting the wrong example for your children, because that isn't what leads to a happy home. But God's clear that, you know, food and clothing and shelter, that's a dad's That's a dad's job. In the first 15 years that Linda and I were here, we chose to send our kids throughout their life to a Christian school, but finances were really, really tight. Previous to coming to this church, too, they weren't anything to write home about. I often worked a second and a third job to be able to make ends meet. But, you know, I remember Linda scrimping and scraping with the money that we have. And you can chuckle about this, but in the first 15 years we're here. And you know why we did that? Because on Friday we wanted her to be able to have enough grocery money to buy a soda. That's what they call them here in Michigan. They call it pop. We wanted a liter of soda and chips for our Friday night family nights. And we had Friday night family nights. But you know what? We had a good time together. It doesn't take a lot of money to have a good time together. We had a good time together with our family. I provided for my family. I have never, in all the years that I've here been here, never, ever missed a paycheck, First Baptist Church of Oak Creek. It's been faithful, and as I've stayed here through the years, God has blessed you and me, and you've been generous to our family. I appreciate that. But, you know, I don't ever once remember my kids, and if they did, I didn't know about it, but I don't remember my kids complaining about wearing garage sale clothes or hand-me-downs. I don't remember that at all. I was talking to the college and career class. One of the things that I am so grateful for in the provision of this church was the fact that they would send us each summer to a Bible conference someplace in the country. That was right when I came here. That's what they did. And I would go to those, but I didn't go alone. I would take my wife and my family, and we'd add some vacation on the beginning, some vacation on the end. And some of you who've been around here a long time will remember, and you probably thought, man, what a preacher. But anyway, I bought a $200 pop-up camper, and it was a mess. We bought screen, and Linda had we had to take out all the screens because they were rotted out. She sewed in screens, and some of you remember because the parsonage used to be three down, and it would be sometimes in the driveway. But when it was popped up, we used silicone bathtub sealer and jean material to repair the rips in the pop-up camper. But you know what? That was God's provision for us at the time. And we had a blast traveling in that dilapidated camper all over the United States going to these Bible conferences. I just want to tell you, Dad, you can't be lazy. You don't have to provide every single solitary thing for your kids, but you do. A biblical father works hard, and he works to provide food and clothing and a roof over the family's head. He's not a slacker. My dad was not a slacker. A proper father puts the needs of his wife and his family first over his own desires. He is willing to sacrifice for the needs of his family. You don't sit back in the shade and sip lemonade and say, "Hey, yeah, woman, you go to work, you do it. I'm just gonna." No, that's not what you do. Biblically, that's not what you do. If you are going to be the right kind of a father, you need to be a provider for your children. I know we live in difficult times, but I also know this. Take what job you can for the time. Try and bring some provision to your family. The second thing that I think needs to be there biblically is that you need to be an active communicator. An active communicator. I understand that men are notoriously quiet and often non-communicative. I understand that. You might not think so because I'm up here talking so much, Sunday school, Sunday morning, Sunday evening, and Wednesday night, but I don't like talking a whole lot. I have to push myself and had to push myself to be able to communicate. But if you are going to have your family in order, dads, you need to communicate. You need to communicate with your wife. You need to communicate with your children. Now, basically, the definition of communication is giving and receiving of information. But James chapter 1, verse 19 tells us, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, and slow to wrath. And so communication involves talking and listening in the context of self-control. When you communicate, let me just tell you, communication is lost when you're doing it at the top of your young lungs, yelling and shouting and stomping and screaming and all that kind of stuff at your wife or your kids. That's not communication. Communication pretty well ceased from then. They just want to flee. They don't want to be around you. Ephesians chapter 4, verse 15 says we need to speak the truth in love. Deuteronomy chapter 6 and verse 7 tells us that fathers are to actively talk about how to live so as to please the Lord. And we're going to look at that even more when we come to teaching the truth in the next point for the tea of fathers. But, if you are going to be what you need to be for your wife and for your children, being quiet and non-communicative is just not going to do. It's just not going to do. There is no such thing as an effective silent leader. Your wife can't be a mind reader. Neither can your kids. And so your kids are doing something you don't like and you blow up. Your kids had no idea what you wanted of them. And so now you're tweaked and now you're blowing up. Well, you know, wake up and smell the roses. I'm not saying you have to jabber off the mouth and ratchet off the handle all the time. I'm not saying that at all. But you do need to make sure that there's open, honest communication with your children and with your wife. Communication is so much a vital part of any relationship, and particularly in the family context. You need to talk a lot, you need to listen a lot, and you need to verbalize your love. Talk a lot, listen a lot, and verbalize your love. I told you the joke before about the man who, the wife finally talks him into going to the pastor for counseling, and so he goes there and he's sitting in the pastor's office, his arms are like this, and wife starts pouring out her heart, and wife saying, I just don't know whether Herman loves me or not. And pastor looked at Herman and said, well, why are you here, Herman? Well, what do you mean? Well, what do you mean? She wanted to go. Oh. Your wife wanted to come for counseling. Did you hear what she said? She says she's not sure that you love her. Do you love her? And he goes, I told her once when we got married I loved her and I'm a man of my word. That isn't going to cut it. That isn't going to cut it. You need to talk a lot. You need to listen a lot. You need to verbalize your love for your wife. You need to verbalize your love for your children. And communicate. You need to let them know what you expect. In fact, that kind of dovetails right into the next point, which is you need to be a teacher of truth. A teacher of truth. Dad, one of your key responsibilities is being a teacher of your children. Paul said in Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 4, and ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up. And the word bring them up is rear them to maturity. That's what the word means. You need to teach them, bring them up, rear them to maturity in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord. Now, the nurture there means to train by chastening. It refers specifically to disciplinary correction. And without exception, all of the college students today in the college class said one of the things they didn't like about their dads was is they got spanked. I didn't expect to say, oh yeah, that was so neat. But anyway, at least the parents were, or at least the dad was doing what he's supposed to. But nurture means training by chastening and disciplinary correction. And then admonition means training by words, what you say, what you teach. I want to address the training and teaching verbally first by words. Children need to be clearly taught what their guidelines are, what their limits are. Don't make it so expansive that they cannot have, you know, here's 947 rules I want you to keep. No, that's not what I'm talking about. But they need to know what your guidelines are. You know, no deception, no lying, no disrespect, whatever your rules are. One of the best places I found to teach my children is around the dinner table. Now, I want to talk about that. You know what? If you can't turn off the television and gather around the dinner table, you ought to throw the stinking thing out. And you know what? Don't turn on the radio around the dinner table and jerk the earphones right out of their iPod and make them put it away. For us, and I know some of your schedules don't allow that, but for us, one of the best places for teaching was around the dinner table. We didn't have the TV on. We turned off the radio. We stashed the iPods. They didn't even have iPods. We didn't know what that was back then. But you know what we would do? We'd eat and talk. And talk and eat. And we'd ask, what went on at your day? And then we often read the Bible there, and we prayed together, and we discussed the meaning of Bible words and Bible passages. You need to tell your children how to put biblical principles into practice. I would give them hypothetical situations, and I'd ask them how they would respond, and then I would tell them how I would expect them to respond in a hypothetical situation that they might face in life. We would share with them how to handle life situations biblically. We would identify and talk about godly and ungodly character traits. They would say, do you know what Jimmy did at school today? He called the teacher a nasty word. Well, we would talk to them about the respect of authority, and we would tell them what would happen to them if they ever did the same thing. There would have been an education meeting, and I was the board of directors. So we shared how to handle the situations of life. Turn with me to Deuteronomy chapter 6. And you know it, but Israeli fathers were told very clearly to integrate biblical principles and teachings into the lives of their children. And so many times dads don't do that. They leave it up to the mom, or they leave it undone altogether. Or they don't, you know, if they can't be there, they don't instruct the mom on what is supposed to be done in that context. But in Deuteronomy chapter 6 and verse 1 through 9, it says, "And now these are the commandments, the statutes, the judgments which the Lord your God commanded to teach you, that ye might do them in the land whither ye go to possess it." I want to tell you something. You're not going to get biblical principles. You're not going to get proper morals. You're not going to get proper behavior taught in the context of our culture by the neighbors for the most part, in the schools for the most part. It is not going to happen. You know whose responsibility that is? It's your responsibility. Do you want to pass on your values? Do you want to pass on your biblical values? You can't expect them to glean that from the culture. They're not going to get it from the television set, believe me. And most of the music that is listened to today, they're not going to get it from the stupid music. Most of that music, it wouldn't even make a good bonfire. It says, "That thou mightest fear the Lord thy God, and keep all his statutes and his commandments, which I command thee, thou and thy son." See, not only just your kids, but you too. "Thou and thy son and thy son's sons," your grandchildren, "all the days of thy life, and that thy days may be prolonged." Now, here's what it goes on to say as we move on. Here's what they are to teach. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one Lord. Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, with all thy might. Now watch in verse 6. These words which I command thee this day shall be in your heart. How do you get them in your heart? You memorize them, you read about them, you're taught about them. That's how you get them there in your head. When it's not talking about this thing that beats here, it's talking about this thing that thinks here. And thou shalt teach them diligently unto thy children. And look at how you do that. You shall talk of them when you're sitting in your house. A lot of times there's so much noise going on in your house. The kids are cooped up in their bedrooms. They have their television in their bedrooms. They have their music in their bedrooms. They don't eat together. There's very little communication. They may wave to each other. You know why there's so many problems today? When thou sittest in thy house, when thou walkest by thy way, when thou liest down, when thou risest up, a dad, a biblical dad, is to take every possible opportunity to share with their children what God's teachings are and how to provide them. Now, the second part of that, after you have taught them, there needs to be some enforcement of those. I know it's not popular, but I looked at the Wisconsin law this week, and I know you have to be careful and all that kind of stuff, but it is not illegal to spank your children in Wisconsin. It is not. It says very clearly that we are to bring them up in the nurture, and that's talking about spanking. Training by word is to be reinforced by training by discipline. Now, I've listed a whole bunch of passages from Proverbs, in case you think it's not biblical. He that spareth his rod hateth his son, but he that loveth him chasteneth him betimes, or many times, Proverbs 13:24. Chasten thy son while there is hope, and let not thy soul spare for his crying, Proverbs 19:18. Foolishness is bound in the heart of a child, but the rod of correction shall drive it far from him, Proverbs 22:15. Withhold not correction from the child, for if thou beatest him with the rod, he shall not die. Thou shalt beat him with the rod and shall deliver his soul from hell, Proverbs 23:13-14. The rod and reproof giveth wisdom, but a child left to himself bringeth his mother to shame. Correct thy son, and he shall give thee rest. Yea, he shall give delight to thy soul. Proverbs 29:15 and Proverbs 29:17. I completely agree with J. Vernon McGee, the old gruff voice speaker that I can hardly stand to listen to, but he has a lot of good things to say. J. Vernon McGee said this, children who will not obey need to be spanked. They need a trip to the woodshed. Now, McGee goes on to say, a child should never be whipped with a parent while a parent is angry. You shouldn't be spanked while a child is angry. This is stated very clearly. We are never to provoke our children to wrath, which will happen if they see that we are simply venting a mean disposition on them. And then he goes on to conclude they should be disciplined. Dad, you are to be a teacher of truth by your words. And you are to be a teacher of truth by your discipline. There's a fourth thing that a father ought to be, and that is an honorable hero or an honorable role model. You know, when children are young, it says in Proverbs chapter 17, verse 6, the last half of the verse, the glory of children are their fathers. I can remember back, my dad was the best thing since mom's freshly baked sliced bread. I mean, you know, my dad was a fireman, and every kid wants to be a fireman. And, you know, my dad was known in the community, and my dad taught me how to high jump, and he taught me how to play baseball and hold a bat. And, you know, when children are young, they look up to their dads with great admiration. And that's exactly what the verse says. Dad, your children need your attention. Dads need to give their children quality time. Let them know that you love them. Have fun with your children. I still remember Carla rolling around with you and Steve and Sarah on the floor and playing Black Widow and doing fun things. And as they got older, we traveled together, did the camping thing together. And they would tell that I was coming into their games because my mouth would reveal me when I came in and yelled at the top of my lungs, "Go get them!" Children need your time, Dad. Have fun with your kids. It should not be all business all the time. A dad who spends time with his children, doing things with them, will be a hero in their eyes. He will be the greatest. Your children will hold you, dads, in high esteem. But I also want to say this. There's another very important aspect. Use your hero status to be the right kind of a role model for your children. This will help them to be well-rounded, stable children. And here's what I mean by that. You know, dads, if you are their hero, the right kind of a role model, it will help your daughters find the right kind of man when they look for a marriage partner. It will help the sons be the right kind of a father if you're the right kind of a role model and you spend time with them. Well, that brings us to the E in father. And that's the fifth thing a father ought to be, is an encourager. An encourager. The Apostle Paul wrote to the Corinthians in 1 Corinthians chapter 11 and verse 2. And he says, "Now I praise you, brethren." I believe that we should encourage our children. You know, children need discipline when they disobey. I agree with that, and I practice that. But they need positive reinforcement when they follow your commands. You see, it's easy to spot the disobedience. It's kind of like Hunter's Orange. If I had to do it all over again, I would encourage and praise more than I did. I always encouraged them because I wanted them to do their best. I pushed them to do their best. I didn't want them to be mediocre in what they did. But kids need the praise. They need the encouragement to do right. So when they do right, note it. Now, I am not for what is done today. If a kid does a half job, a crummy job, you say, "Oh, that's wonderful, Johnny. That's just great." Because if they don't follow through, if they don't finish the job, they shouldn't get the praise. For that, they need to learn to follow through. I mean, there needs to be the right kind of a balance. And then you shouldn't expect a 5-year-old to perform like a 12-year-old. It has to be on their level. I think dads need to be an encourager. I think there needs to be a proper blend of discipline and encouragement. You know, children look for feedback concerning their actions, whether they're right or they're wrong. And when a father puts his hand on his son or his daughter's shoulder and gives them a hug and comments that he appreciates their effort, he appreciates their hard work, that builds a long-lasting relationship. You know, as I already mentioned, I look back and I wished I'd have done that more, but I can challenge you to do it more. if you have little ones that you're rearing. You know, I praise them for the good, and I encourage them not to settle for the mediocre, but to strive for excellence, and I believe a father should be an encourager. Finally, my R in father stands for respectful ruler, respectful ruler. You need to take your position in the family, men. It's very clear from the scripture that the husband is the head of the wife. He is also the head of the children. He is the head of the home. He's the head of the house. He is not to be a diabolical dictator, but he is to be a loving, consistent leader. He needs to recognize his responsibility to lead and calmly lead. Not lead at the top of his lungs. He needs to lead by example. You know, there shouldn't be two sets of rules. One that dad can get away with these things and yet mom and the kids can't. No. He follows the same rules and routines that he expects others to follow. He needs to be calm and collected. I believe with all my heart he needs to set the boundaries for his wife and for his children. And they need to know what those boundaries are. And as a ruler, he must show firmness and he must discipline. His family expects that because he holds himself to the same standard of conduct or even higher. The children see that he loves his wife. Your kids need to see that you love your wife. And they see that he loves them. They need to see that. You know, children love and need a respectful ruler. There can't be, you know, anything where the worst job I ever had was working where there was two owners in the business. That's the worst job I ever had. It is the worst job I ever had. One would tell me to do one thing and the other one would tell me to do the other thing. So if I did what he said, then the owner said, I told you to do this. And finally, I just said, look, you guys got to, you know, one of you has to have the final say. A wise husband is going to take, give a good listening ear to what his wife has to say. My wife has saved my bacon so many times with her research or her insights from things that she thought of. I can't even enumerate them all. But it always came down to the fact that I had the final say. Ask my kids. They knew who was the leader. It certainly wasn't always perfect, and I certainly made a fair share of mistakes. But God was good because we tried to order our home in a biblical fashion. Linda did not usurp my position. She did her role well. And the children, when they saw mom under the leadership of dad, understood that they needed to be under his leadership as well. So here it is. Six things a father ought to be. He ought to be the financial provider. He ought to be an active communicator. He ought to be a teacher of truth. He ought to be an honorable hero or role model. He ought to be an encourager. And he ought to be a respectful ruler and not a diabolical dictator. Well, that gives you something to think about. Hopefully challenge you young men who are not yet married to realize that there is very big responsibilities for a man when he chooses to get married. It isn't, you know, oh, I love her and the rest doesn't matter. And you need to go in with your eyes wide open and realize that there is a lot of responsibility. I don't think anybody knows it for sure when they choose to get married. I got married relatively young. My life changed dramatically once I got married. Not for the worst, but for the better. Because I came to realize that there are very, very important responsibilities once you get married. And I remember the last time that I did my dangerous cave exploring. It isn't that I didn't do some after that, but when I had to take off my hard hat and squeeze into a tunnel to get to where I was going, I got to thinking, because Steve had been born and he was at home with Linda, I'm thinking, you know, if I get stuck down here and I die or a flood comes, because it was in a floodplain, and if it rained 20 miles away, the cave would flood and you'd drown, and there had been people who drowned in that cave, but we were adventurous. We wanted to explore that cave. I said, you know, that leaves my wife and my son without a dad, and kids need a dad. From that day on, I began to modify my lifestyle and to take much more seriously my responsibilities to my wife and to my family. And that was a good thing and not a bad thing. So, as you single guys think about the possibility of someday getting married, you need to understand that there are responsibilities for you. Now for the single ladies. You want to think very carefully about who you want to marry. If a guy is all wrapped up in himself and all wrapped up in his things and he just wants to play with his toys and do a lot of those things. I don't mind having some toys. I have toys myself. I understand that. But here's what I'm saying. You got to ask yourself, do I want to submit to this guy for as long as I live? You know, how does he treat his mom? How does he treat others? How does he treat me? If you yell and scrap before marriage, you're going to yell and scrap after marriage. I remember talking not too long ago with somebody on the telephone. They wanted to come and counsel. I don't take much outside counseling anymore. And this lady is waxing eloquent about the problems of her husband. And I said, well, how long has he done that? Well, he did that even before we got married. I said, duh. Now, God can change anything, but it usually doesn't change a whole lot. It maybe even gets amplified a little bit after you get married. If the guy's uncaring before he gets married, he's going to be worse after he gets married, unless the Lord gets a hold of him. You know, if he has a bad habit before marriage, he's likely to have a bad habit after marriage. Young ladies, you have a responsibility and a role to follow. And you need to evaluate those things, not just on hormones and not just on, oh, I feel so warm and fuzzy. You need to ask, you know, is this somebody who's going to care about me? Is this someone who's going to work hard? Is this someone who's going to provide for me and the family? Is this somebody I want to have children with? Because I look at the culture today and I think that there's a lot of people who go into marriage with their head in a complete fog. They do not have a clue I'm glad to say mine was only in a partial fog. But God was good. But I want you to take those things into account. And I appreciate your attentiveness for today. If you don't know Jesus Christ as your personal Savior, man, you're missing it. Jesus Christ is the great lover of your soul. And if you'll come to know Jesus Christ as your personal Savior, He'll give you the desire and the power to do His will. That was the key to our marriage. We were believers. We wanted to be dedicated believers. I could tell you about some of the major changes in our lives as after we got married, what God did in our lives. I don't have the time, but because we both wanted the Lord's will, it made a major change in our biblical beliefs. It made a major change in our dress standards. It made a major change in our relationship with others. God changed things in our life because we wanted His will and we wanted His blessing on our marriage and on our family. And that would not have happened had we not both been born again believers.